For this evening's talk, I got taken a request to give a talk on an anniversary of somebody's loved one's death, died just over a year ago, and to try and once again take away the idea that death is something painful, to put it in context, and to show just how the whole idea of life and death, the two bookends of life, the birth and the final death, actually is nothing to be afraid of, but just like a beautiful cover to a book, the back and the front of the book, it just contains this beautiful story inside called A Human Life. And just like Harry Potter, after episode one, there's usually many other episodes come afterwards. And this is the sake of the sense of our life. And it's always goes on and on and on, and seeing the bigger picture. And I did hear from administrator assistant, supposed to be a physicist from New York here this evening somewhere, if he's here. And I always like to look at, you know, the death and life of a human being the same way as the death and life of this universe, just to see that there is a bigger picture. And I know that sometimes one of the reasons why we're afraid of death in our modern society is we have just too much of a materialist idea of this thing called life. And I recently saw a video on YouTube of Rupert Sheldrake, and he was a very controversial scientist, but he was saying that in science that we have what we call scientific method, which, you know, I always will follow, which is always questioning anything. And we've also got scientific dogma, which refuses to question things. And I remember on that video, it was on TEDx, a video channel, and it was actually banned, it was taken off. And he came on afterwards to say that this proves, this is dogmatic, because it was the scientists took it off. And there is that dogma there. And I remember one of the things he was saying, which was, this is great, this is what Buddhism is, what religion should be, it should always be challenging. This is what it shares with science, not the dogma, but with the method to challenge and question everything. And one of the things he was saying there, that even these great physical constants, they're not constant, they can change. And as soon as I heard that, my mind went back to when I was at Cambridge, and the Lucasian professor of physics at that time was Professor Fred Hoyle. And this was in the late 60s and 70s. And he also was controversial. And one of the great memories I have of that time was, it was, I think, the 100th anniversary of the University Astronomical Society. And so they had this lecture to celebrate. Two people giving lectures. The B lecture was this guy who discovered quasars. In any other place, he'd be a star. But the A lecture was this Professor Fred Hoyle. And he was electric, had people from all the different disciplines were listening. That guy could lecture. And I remember him saying also, this was 40, 50 years ago, that all these physical constants, they do change. Why not? Any person who knows what I'm talking about here, even Big G, why does that have to be constant? And after hearing that, remembering that, this guy, Rupert Sheldrake, was actually presenting evidence that they do change. These are things which a lot of scientists would just assume as true. But the other thing which Fred Hoyle was famous for was this great idea called the steady state cosmos. This is not going to be a science lecture. I'm going to bring this in to birth and death in a moment. Because, and the opposite of that steady state was this guy, Stephen Hawking, in the same university, who's now the Lucasian professor, who took over this Fred Hoyle's chair after a while. He was saying, no, it's Big Bang, that this universe had a beginning and it will obviously have an end. And Professor Hoyle was still saying, yes, but that's only a small scale. That before this Big Bang, there were other Big Bangs. and there'll be many big bangs after this. This is just the big scale of the universe. And just thinking of a big scale, a big bang, and just one universe, that is so narrow-minded. And that was a very beautiful thing which I remember from that lecture to this day. That even these universes get reincarnated. It happened once, according to science. This was one of the most compelling arguments. If it can happen once, why on earth can't it happen twice, three times, four times? And that was the same argument which people used for life and death. Yeah, it is a miracle. It's amazing to contemplate that you're alive, that you can feel and live on this planet. It's a miracle being born. But it's no less miracle. In fact, it would be even more weird if you're only born once. Why not many times? Like universes coming and going. Maybe it was because I was born in a place like London and seeing just in this time of the year when it got to autumn, everything died. Everything was no leaves on the trees, no animals out in the fields. I often recall, this is going back to meditation, once I went to visit this monastery in the south of England, when we first got this monastery in Chithurst, I went to visit there, and my goodness, it was cold. If you think this is cold today, it was minus 26 degrees centigrade. And the British tabloids, they showed me, of course, their headline, "Even the beer froze." You know tabloids. But I remember one morning, because I was a visitor, I didn't have any duties. And one morning, just after the breakfast, I got out and walked in the forest. This must have been about January, minus 26 degrees. All the monks, you know, so they sat in front of the refrigerators with the doors open to warm themselves up. But I went out walking in the forest. And again, it's one of those most memorable times, you know, in my life, because as I walked in the forest, crunching the snow, no one else was up and out at that time of the day. Only mad monks and Englishmen, and I was both, go out at that time of the morning in the cold. And it was magical, because when I stopped and the crunch of the snow faded away, nothing moved at all. It was total stillness. There was no wind, no human beings, no aircraft or no cars on any road. The roads were blocked with snow. And no animals, no birds were flying in the air. There's no little hedgehogs or other animals on the forest floor. They were all hibernating, sleeping in their little holes somewhere. I had the whole universe to myself. When I stopped, the universe stopped. When I moved my foot, it started again. That was an amazing experience, which everyone has those types of experiences. But even though nothing was alive, it was only a few months, the animals were sleeping underneath. Life was dormant, but it hadn't died. It was just waiting for the time to get reborn. And seeing those cycles of nature, to me, as even as a young man, I thought, why does that have to be different for this human life? Just to think we're born once. And of course, many of you, if you've been privileged, have been with people who have been dying. If you ever have that chance, never, never throw it away. Never neglect it. Never be afraid. It's one of the greatest experiences which people have. Many of you may have been with the birth of your child. You know, been just watching and seeing this being emerge, you know, from your wife's belly. A being come into this world. And that's one of the most amazing things. But it's just as amazing as holding the hand of somebody you love and watching them take that last breath to exhale. And no more breath comes in. It's an amazing experience. And many people have said, as long as there is birth, and as long as there is dying, there will always be spirituality, which gets to the heart of these amazing questions. Everything which goes in between, yeah, you can have psychology, you can have science, you can have technology, but these amazing moments of your life, the bookends of your life, the covers of a book and in which is your life, they are incredibly powerful. And what does it actually mean there? Sometimes people ask, you know, just how can you die well? And the only way to die well is living well. This dying moment is no more than a sum total of everything that you are and have done and have been. All coming together in this crescendo of the last moments of your life. Nothing to be feared, but something to be held in awe. I used to love music. When I was young, I used to like pop music and then rock music and then classical music. And when I really got into symphonies, it was always that last part of the symphony, the crescendo, when all the different themes all came together and the whole orchestra all together were just putting everything in this final moment of the symphony. And that was awesome. That was incredible, the power of the ending of a symphony. And even here, you know, we live in Perth here, this beautiful city which faces in the western direction the huge Indian Ocean. And living up in Serpentine on the hills, very often you just watch the sun go down over the ocean. Maybe that's up in the hills. Maybe you'd be living closer to the ocean. You've seen the great sunsets over the Indian Ocean. The most wonderful time of the day. It's a wonderful time of the day because all of the work of the day is being completed, unless you're on night shift. But the hard work has been done. You've done your duties, and this is a time when you just relax, when you can appreciate the fruits of all that hard work you've done during the day. You can relax and bask in the beautiful sunset. The work is over. You've eaten, you've lived, you've loved. Now's the time to enjoy the setting of that sun. And they're gorgeous moments. And I always look at that at the end of a life. Gorgeous moments, the work has been done. Now's the time to rest, to sleep, and come back again the following morning. Another life, another place, to learn some more. And of course, when you take into sleep with you, you become unconscious. Yeah, you dream a little bit. But when you wake up in the morning, you still carry the memories, the characters, the good and bad karma, you may say, of the days before. You take that into the next morning. The same way in your next lives. You take all that you've learned, all that you've done, the good and the bad as well, into the next life with you. When you look at it that way, that this death is not just an ending. Universe can't just end. They have to get reborn again. And the winters in the Northern Hemisphere, it just doesn't finish and end. You can't see life, but it's under the surface. It never disappears. One of the great similes which inspired me and which I share whenever I talk to people who are dying or who have died, or people who's actually you've all died. Sometimes, you know, we call certain religions born-again Christians. All Buddhists are born-again Buddhists because we believe in reincarnation, so all born-again Buddhists. So, but when you look at sort of, you know, the life which we lead, and you give it a proper perspective, you give it the big image, like many universes, many lives, things come go round and round. When you see the bigger picture, you know, what is death? But death is just a birth into the next life, the transition time. And of course, there's nothing to be afraid of then. Why do people get afraid of death? One of the reasons is because you can't control it. We're always afraid of things which we can't control. And part of a life of spirituality is to trust you don't need to control things. You can let things be. You can flow with things rather than because of fear wanting to control it. That's a wonderful thing about death. You can't predict it. You can't make it happen the time you want to. When you understand that, you understand what the problem is. Too much in life, we think we want to control. Controlling our body when you're sick, and that makes you even more sick. For me, I know just how to have good health, to relax the body, just let it be. If it wants to cough, let it cough. If it wants to sneeze, let it sneeze. If you do things like that, you find you're very healthy. And especially just as a side issue, whenever you're meditating, if you do want to cough, please cough straight away. Otherwise, we've got what we call in meditation the volcano effect. The volcano effect is when you plug this mountain, then the pressure builds and builds and builds, and when it does blow, that's a huge devastating eruption, and lava and rocks go all over the place. And it's exactly what happens when you try and stop coughing. You build up pressure, and when it does blow, which it inevitably must, it's such a loud noise they can hear it the other side of Perth, and you spray all this unhealthy lava from your mouth all over the people sitting next to you. So please don't do that. You can understand this is one of the other examples of when we try and control, we have the idea that this is going to help, but it usually makes things worse. This is why we love like relaxing and letting things be. It's called kindness. Same if you want to try and control the relationship you're in, control your partner just to make him just the way you want to mold him into the perfect person, or mold her either. You can't do that. That breaks the relationship. The idea of a relationship with another person is to respect them for who they are, to love them for who they are. And if you're in a relationship when somebody respects you, they don't want to change you, they understand you, they accept you, what a beautiful relationship that is. You're not having to live up to other people's expectations and wants. You can relax and be free. And that's the same with life, as I was saying last week, when you can relax with life, when you don't ask from life something it can never give you. You relax with life. You respect life. When you relax with death, you don't ask from death what it can never give you. It's part of life. You can actually have compassion towards her. You know that I usually always like sticking up to underdogs. If anybody has been treated badly, like I was saying, this guy Rupert Sheldrake, because he was banned, then he's my friend. I was banned, you know, from a monastery because I ordained bhikkhunis. And so anyone who's banned is my friend. Rebels unite. So sometimes when there is, you know, something like death, death is stigmatized. Death is like this being who no one likes and no one respects. And so I see like death as this lonely being. And no one loves it, but I will love you. I will be kind to you. No one else will, but I will. And it changes our whole attitude. And that death, like the end of a symphony, becomes this beautiful moment, especially if you had a beautiful life. Now, the people who asked me to talk about this, they did mention, they said, oh, you know, we lost our loved ones. Straight away, the use of language is just so unskillful. You don't lose somebody when they die. You've gained them. You've had them for such a long time. What do you mean you've lost someone you loved? Don't ever use that. When somebody dies, say, I gained my mother. I had her for 60, 70 years, or for 10 years. I don't care how long. You gained somebody. Because we often ask, would you rather never have met that person? Never had them enter your life? This is your loved one. Thank you so much for being there for so long. You can't be there forever. No music, no concert can go on forever. No talk can go on forever. You have to go home. And so does all beings have to go home. So thank you for being there for so long. Never look upon it as a loss. Look upon it as a gain. You've had this beautiful relationship with your mother, father, husband, your little child who passed away. When you look at it that way, you understand what death is. And it's something very beautiful. You can't have people come into your life without leaving. Coming in and leaving have to come together. And the wonderful thing is we never look at the beginnings and ends isolated from what happens in between. The beginnings and the ends define and are defined by what happens in between. So whenever I think of one day that I'm going to die and I don't know when, that brings me right here into how I'm living my life. I want to die well like each one of you. And I know, as I said during the meditation, right now is where my future is being made. My death is being made right now by the way I live. And I want to live well. I want to live happily. I want to live peacefully. I want to live kindly. I want to live joyfully. And if I do that now, joyfully living in this moment, then I'm creating a joyful death. And all the time up to that point, joyful. And afterwards, joyful as well. So how stupid is it when somebody dies to create pain, grief and suffering? You know, you don't have to do that. It was one of the weird experiences I had by going to Northeast Thailand for 9 years. I was talking in the car on the way up here that in that time, Northeast Thailand, I'm not talking about Central Thailand or Southern Thailand, the Northeast was forgotten by people. It had never been colonized by any Western power. And this is no exaggeration, I went to several villages where I was the first white man they'd ever seen. And I remember, I was just joking, no, not joking, this is a true story, that when I went on alms round in some of these villages, instead of putting the rice in my bowl, it fell outside of my bowl because they weren't looking what they were doing, they were just gawking at me. A white monk. They'd never seen anything like that before. But the thing which I noticed, many things I noticed, because it was a culture which was not, it's totally separated from Western culture. Whenever there was a funeral, no one cried. There was no grief. And that was weird. But I was there for 9 years, and they weren't hiding it. We lived basically just outside the village. The village would come every day. We'd go to them for their ceremonies, and you were part of the village. You know, after I first came here, after being there for 9 years, I think about 3 or 4 years later, I had a chance to go and visit. And when I went back into the village, the first time I went into the village, you know, was when on alms out in the morning, they looked at me, and they started crying. I'd come back again. Where have you been? I've been in Australia. You were part of the village. You were like their family. It's such a beautiful experience to know that. But this is just how close you were to everybody. And you knew them. They could not hide it. They wouldn't hide it. And they were just they're not sophisticated enough to lie, some of those poor villagers. And they had no grief at all. To me, that was amazing. You can have a life, you know, and someone you love very dearly, and they die, and you don't feel sad, you don't have tears. In fact, you feel this wonderful sense of this is part of life, and you enjoy it. Enjoy the beautiful memories you've had with this person. Why is it? I keep on saying this, the two bad bricks in a wall simile. And I won't go into detail on that because it's the first story in the opening the door of your heart, number one. No, two bad bricks in a wall, because I did my first wall, made two mistakes, and I wanted to destroy that wall because every time I saw it, my eyes went to my two mistakes. And I couldn't see anything else except the two crooked bricks which I had laid. And after 3 months of nightmares and wanting to destroy it and wanting to avoid it, I did wake up in the middle of the night thinking, oh God, what have I done? Everyone could see it. That was the worst part. You know what conceit is? It's okay making a mistake and you can hide it. But this was a war. Everyone could see it. And then this guy came along and said, that's a beautiful wall. And I thought the guy was crazy. I thought he was blind. And I actually said to him, have you left your glasses in the car? Can't you see those two bad bricks? And he said, yes, I can see the two bad bricks, but I can also see the 998 good bricks as well. And that blew me away. Because he was true. He was right. I was a blind one. When I made a mistake, a painful experience, that's all I would ever see. The two mistakes I'd made. Your last week, how has it been? You had a good week? Bad week? How many of you, when you look back on your week, just think of the two mistakes which happened? The two painful experiences you had? Now that's ridiculous. You are blind. And that's also just creating a lot of pain in your life. You had some wonderful experiences in the last week. Some really great joy and fun and jokes and laughter. Like some of you come at Bodhinyana Monastery, we're always laughing and cracking stupid jokes and saying all sorts of stupid things. And, you know, sometimes you think, what are monks doing? You're supposed to be serious. Well, I don't know what you want, but I refuse to be serious. I'm going to be lighthearted. And we do have such a beautiful time there. So I remember the beautiful times. Yeah, there's sometimes things go wrong, you make mistakes or whatever, but why is it that when we remember the past, we just remember the mistakes? Why is it I look at that wall and I just see the two bad bricks? That fellow taught me, yeah, there's bad bricks, but there's beautiful bricks as well. Look at the whole wall, and it's beautiful. He was right. Look at life. You just lost a father, a husband, a wife. Why are you just looking at that? The one bad brick of a death. What about all those 9,999,999,999 beautiful experiences you've shared together in the thing we call a life? Why is it? What grief is? You're just focusing on one bad brick, an ending of a life, and totally blind to all the life which went before. What a wonderful time we've had together. That was beautiful. This is one of the problems with the psychology of the human being, especially in the West, with such fault finders. We just focus on what goes wrong. It's one of the reasons why there's so many divorces, why you can't have a relationship which lasts for a long time, why you can't even like yourself. You took one look at yourself and I see all the bad bricks, all the stupid things which I did, all the mistakes I've done. Yeah, they're there, but what about looking at the 998 beautiful things which you have, you are, which you've done? You look at that and you think, hey, I'm not so bad after all. We have lots of prisoners from Karnak Prison Farm, just down the road from our monastery. If you ever go and visit Bodhinyana Monastery, just go a bit further and you find our prison. Sometimes people confuse the two. They go to the prison and ask, is there any monks here? Because, you know, we've got a wall, they haven't. And so you get many of the prisoners coming in. And, you know, one of them's going to become a monk. Brilliant. You know, he's got parole, so he didn't escape. We don't give sanctuary. That's one of the prisoners asked once, do you give sanctuary? Can we escape? And then they can't catch us inside. I said, no, we don't give sanctuary. That's illegal. But anyway, what we do is actually teach. And one of the prisoners came and said, there's this guy who'd been in prison for so many years. And you know, he was going around saying he'd read that story, the two bad bricks. And he's going around saying, it's just two bad bricks. It's just two bad bricks. That's all it is. Because he looked at his life. And because he only saw the mistakes in his life, the terrible upbringing he had, and all the other things which he did wrong. And he forgot to see all the beautiful things he'd done in his life. When he saw that, he realized he wasn't such a bad person anymore. People like that, when they are released, never go back. If you think you're a bad person, you become a bad person, you do bad things. Seeing two bad bricks, that's all there was. When he gets released, he's not going to go back to jail again. he's going to have a beautiful, happy life, and he deserves that, like everyone does. But this particular story with death, why is it we just look at death? One bad brick in a person's life. Can't we look at the rest of the life and all the wonderful memories we've had? You realize the whole thing, the birth and the death included. Beautiful. What a great time we've had together. What a great time we've had before we die. Which means you can die at peace. You're going to die anyway. You can actually, as when I had school dinners, was it 50 years ago, you know, the menu was like it or lump it, as they used to say. Same with death, that's the only choice you have. Like it or lump it. Lump it means just complain about it. So this is a great choice in life. You know, it's not what life is. It's just what we make of it, how we react to it, how we see it. That's a great thing about Buddhism. You know, we don't try and change things too much. Yeah, we do try and make the world a better place. But the main emphasis of the teachings you hear here is not trying to change yourself, but change the way you look at yourself. Don't try and change your partner, but change the way you regard them. Love them, instead of always trying to find fault with them and control them. Not trying to change life and try to make a life where we can finally have a life where there's no more death. To find a life where we can get rid of all sickness. To find a life where we can get rid of all the other things which we don't like. That's not the way. Instead of changing the world, we change the way we look at it. And that's the same with death. Look upon this beautiful thing, the beautiful end of a life. And we know it's going to come back again. Universes come, universes go. And that's actually straight from the teachings of the Buddha 25, 26 centuries ago. He said many universe cycles. You know, he was kept on saying, not one big bang, there's been thousands, millions. The whole idea of endings. I used to think when I was even in school, where does the universe end? Is there some wall somewhere? You know, which says, you know, you can't go any further. You know, you'll be prosecuted. You know, we've got a sign at Jhana Grove, our retreat center. I don't know if those of you have been to Jhana Grove, our retreat center, our sign. I wrote this sign on a piece of paper when we first went to Bodhinyana Monastery, because we only had, in that time, only had a wire fence. And we actually, two or three times, people came in there and stole things. And so, you know, we needed a sign there. And the usual sign is, trespassers will be prosecuted. But does that stop anyone? Who can prosecute? Anyway, if you did call the police, by the time the police came, the burglars would be a long way away. And that's also why, even here, when we were afraid that somebody was burgling this place, it was just a couple of drunks getting lost on Easter. And it happens. They were climbing over the walls. But they were just drunk, that's all. But anyway, we called the police, and we expected the police to arrest somebody. But no, before they came about a kilometre away, you could hear the sirens. So what do you... put the sirens on there. You know, the burglar will run away. He said, exactly. We don't want any trouble. So they warn them to run away. Okay, never mind. I'm sorry about that, Mr. Policeman. You can understand why they do those things. But anyway, so trespassers will be prosecuted doesn't work. So, you know, being a cheeky monk, I put on this paper sign, trespassers will be converted. And you know, now we put that on a big sign, you know, which is going to be there for a long time, at our retreat center. That works. People are more afraid of being converted than they ever are of being prosecuted. And that actually, somebody took a photo of that, and they sent it up to the Daily Telegraph, which is a big newspaper in England, and it sort of won a prize. You know, for the funniest sign, sort of the month or something. Sort of afterwards. But yeah, so endings of things. What actually are endings? There's no such thing as an ending. Like an end of a universe, and it can't be like a wall or some precipice where you can just fall off. What's on the other side of the ending? A beginning of time. How can it be a beginning of time? What happened before the beginning? That's why the whole idea of like universe is having a beginning and an end. There has to be something before the beginning, which is why I love this beautiful Fred Hoyle, this steady state. Universes come, universes go, but there's something like eternal about the whole thing. Life's come, life's go. Something eternal about all of this. That's why I always thought this Fred Hoare was really a Buddhist. Stephen Hawking was more like a one-lifer. You know, just having big bang and finish and nothing before, nothing afterwards. One life, being born and died, and that's it. Makes no sense to me. Time cannot have an end. Space cannot have an end. Life. How can your life, this energy which is you, suddenly stop without any remainder? Do you think that happens? Of course it doesn't. And there's so much evidence out there, which is the crazy part of it, is that evidence is there. You know, people remembering their past lives, near-death experiences, consciousness happening, existing after the brain stops. Establish, if anybody is rational enough to put aside their beliefs and dogmas and actually look at the facts. That's one of the other sayings which I have. Please, I don't know if you want to be a Buddhist or not. If you're a Christian, a Muslim, an atheist, a humanist, or whoever you are, please follow this creed. Never allow your beliefs to stand in the way of truth. The truth is more important. Please bend your faith to fit the facts. Don't bend the facts to fit your faith. Bending the facts to fit the faith is just dogma. All your beliefs should be open to challenges. Even the person who's your enemy in this world, they're not your enemy. That's a dogma. He's my enemy. No, that's dogma. Bend your faith, your dogma. Challenge it. And then one person who was once your enemy can now become your friend. The possibilities are open now for forgiveness, for change. Dogma keeps the world fixed with no possibility for change. This beautiful sense of openness means anything can be changed. It's called anicca in Buddhism. Change, nothing is fixed. So, it's a person who you thought you could never get on with, you could marry and have this beautiful relationship. Wow, isn't that amazing what you can do? Enemies for generations. You know, the Jewish population and the Muslims surrounding it, they can marry and be friends. Why not? So sometimes I love this idea of challenging everything, you know, and questioning so it's not fixed. Therefore, we can actually change. The idea of death as being something which is sad. If ever you have the opportunity, please come to a Buddhist funeral. I tell jokes there. And I'm very proud that the last couple of Buddhist funerals which I went to, you know, people from here, and just at the very end of the funeral service, you know, when everybody was walking out, the last sort of a piece was a piece of music from The Life of Brian. Look on the bright side of life. What a wonderful thing that was. And the dead person asked for that. You know, they just wanted people to go away happy. Are you so miserable, so angry, so negative that you want your loved ones to suffer when you die? I must say, I love the Irish for that. When they have funerals, they have wakes, they have a good time. Yeah, I mean, they do drink a bit too much. But, you know, forgive them a few faults. I don't know if I told this joke the last time, but there was a great joke. What's the difference between an Irish marriage and an Irish funeral? And the answer is, at an Irish funeral, there's one less drunk. So I do apologise for any racial discrimination there, but that was told me by an Irish guy, so I can get away with it. But at least, you know, they can actually change their attitude towards these things. And how healthy that is. Yeah, we look after people. We try and look after our bodies, live as long as we can. We try and celebrate life. But not at the expense of getting so sad when a person dies. Instead, we look at the sort of the idea of death as something, again, like awesome and meaningful. The end of the day, we can look back on all that we've done, look back on all the beautiful experiences which we've had, you know, in these 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of our life. And for those of you who ever go to a funeral service, you go out afterwards and thinking, look, how well am I living my life? It brings you back to the importance, not of just, you know, tomorrow or next week, of today, of now. It's really weird, isn't it? Because the death is like an ending. But what it really does to the people who witness it is they come back not to the endings, to the middles, the middle of life. You think, no, I'm still alive. I've got a ways to go yet. I'm going to make sure the years I have are really valuable. I can't wait to say sorry to the people I have hurt. I can't wait for that time. I'm going to do it now. And all these people I really care about and love, I'm going to do it now. I'm going to say to them how much I love them and how much I care about them. I know that I've read in the newspapers, they have had a trend recently called the bucket list. When you have all these things that you want to do before you die, that's ridiculous. There's only one thing you have to do before you die, and that's what you're doing right now. Don't have all these things, the plans you have to do. Every time you have a plan and a list which you have to do, you're not really enjoying what's happening right now. You're looking at your list rather than life. Life is not a list. Life is right here, right now, with the people sitting right next to you. For the Cancer Support Association, I just told meaning of life. What's the meaning of life? Here's the meaning of life. Very easy. The Emperor's three questions. When is the most important time? Now. If you don't know this story, it's in, again, that book. One of the stories from my youth, which, you know, I read this in a short story by Leo Tolstoy, The Emperor's Three Questions. I don't mind keep on repeating this because I use this in meditation, I use this in my life, I use this everywhere. It's one of these short teachings which is meaningful because it's practical. It's not some theory. It's something which you put into practice and, my goodness, it works. Changes your whole life. The Emperor's Three Questions is, Emperor didn't like any religions. You know, religions were all too dogmatic, always arguing with each other. You know what religions are like. You know, I'm one of them. Okay, fair enough. But he wanted to make his own religion, like we do these days. No, custom make it. So he decided he only needed the answer to three questions, three important questions in life. If he had those answers, he didn't need any more religion. He had the answers. And those three questions are: when is the most important time, who is the most important person, and what is the most important thing to do. First question, very simple: now is the most important time, the only time we ever have. Don't think about the death. The death actually should make you think about now, the time you have here. Now, how many days go past so quickly? Years go by. Why do you think it goes past so fast? Because we're never here. That's what John Lennon used to say. Life is what happens when you're busy thinking about something else. And here, life, please be here. Or like... Oh, he's not here today. He usually comes on Saturdays. I was so busy running around in the office over there carrying papers. And Jacob, you know, he reminded me, he taught me a lesson. Just because I'm a big monk, it doesn't mean I can't be taught by others. And he said, "Now, how are you, Ajahn Brahma?" I said, "I'm getting there." Have you ever said that? "I'm getting there." Stupid thing to say. And he said, "Where are you getting to, Ajahn Brahma?" I said, "Oh, God, you've caught me out." And I was honest, I'm getting to Karakata. That's where I'm going at this rate. So now when people ask me that, I change the answer. I said, "How are you doing?" I said, "I'm being here. I'm not getting somewhere, okay? I'm being here." If you understand that difference, when you're on the way home, are you going home or are you being on the journey? Be on the journey, please. Don't try and get home. Be here, wherever that happens to be. So now is the most important time. And the most important person, brilliant answer. This was the one, the key, which totally changed me. The most important person is the one right in front of you. Again, present moment. Whoever that happens to be. So, Frank, you're right in front of me right now. You're the most important person in the world, Frank, to me. No, I'm sorry, you're not anymore. So I'm just, what that means, you connect with people. Now, what that really means is this event right now, whatever you're experiencing right now, this is the most important moment of your life, the most important thing. Drinking your water, that was really important. Taste it. Get into it. Then you're alive. Not only are you alive, you get incredible happiness and energy and success no matter what you ever do. I teach that in business schools. Simple, powerful. The client in front of you, they're the most important person in the whole world. If you think like that, the person in front of you, they realize that. And they become your client for life. They're valued. That person in front of you, your wife, your husband. How many of you ever think your partner takes you for granted? Because you live together for such a long time. Yeah, they're just there. No. You've been married for 40 years and your partner comes up in front of you. They are as important as when you first went out together. The most important person in the world. Have you ever had that feeling of being given importance? Someone is actually listening to you and respecting you. That's so wonderful. That's, you know, part of what life should really be about. Now is the most important time. The one in front of you, the most important person. The most important thing to do, to care. Compassion again. How compassion works, I don't know. Compassion can be all sorts of things, but it comes from the heart and it always works out beautifully. In Buddhism, they say karma is intention. It's where it comes from. If it comes from compassion and care, it's going to be fine. It's going to work every time. So don't ever think, what should I do? Think, am I doing it compassionately or not? If it's coming from compassion, whatever you do is okay. If it comes from caring. Empathy questions the meaning of life. Now the most important time, the most important person, the one right in front of you. The most important thing to do is to care. And for those of you who meditate, now is the most important time. I'm not going to plan to get jhana later on in my meditation. I'm not trying to get enlightened. That's in the future sometimes. Now is the most important time. And this experience in front of me, someone coughing, that is the most important experience. I don't try and reject anything. I'm sleepy. I'm thinking. That is really important. The experience right in front of me is the most important. And what should I do? How should I relate to this moment? To care for it. It's really important, this moment. It's valuable. You learn so much from the things you least expect to be important. And if you care for every moment, you learn so much. And if you do that, that's called living. And when it comes to the end of your life, you've lived. You've had so many wonderful experiences. You've been here when life has been happening. Otherwise, so afraid of death, so planning, trying to control, trying to escape from things, when you come to your end, you realize you wasted so much time. You wasted so many amazing opportunities. That's sad. So what death teaches me is actually to be more alive, more in this moment, care more. That's the meaning of death. So I never actually look at death as something which is bad. I think it's one of the greatest teachers. Something I can bow to, something I can respect even more than the Buddha. Teaching me something really important. So every time I go to a funeral, it's a privilege. Every time I'm with someone who's dying, I'm not afraid. It's an honor to be with someone. The end of their life, beautiful. Thank you so much for allowing me to share this moment with you. Sometimes it's hard to see a person being born, maybe only the close family. I might put you the same with death, actually, except if you're a monk. I never get invited to people's births, but I certainly get invited to people's deaths. As a monk, maybe that's just being a monk. But it's an amazing experience. So, never be afraid of this thing. Change the whole attitude. And there is something happens afterwards. I totally guarantee it. If I'm wrong, you can come. Oh, actually, you won't be able to come back and say you were wrong, Ajahn Brahm. And you know that happens. It feels right, it is right. There is rebirth carrying on afterwards. So don't be afraid. And let's actually look at life and death together. And don't just look at the two bad bricks. Don't just look at death. Look at everything which went before and what's coming afterwards. And the whole thing changes when you're at peace at last. So that's a little talk dedicated to somebody who asked me to give a talk in honour of their husband and their son's father who passed away just over a year ago. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you. Okay, we do have a couple of questions from overseas, but are there any questions from people here, first of all? Yes.
With respect, in Buddhism, is there a higher being?
A higher being, there is no... There are beings who are higher, but there's no highest being. A highest being like an omnipotent, all-seeing, all-powerful God. There is truth, there is love, there is kindness, impersonal, but not a being which controls all the whole world. And sometimes when people say, well, who created the world, the universe? We create the universe. All beings are the creators. Okay, hopefully that answers the question. So that's a huge question. You know, it's pretty sort of demeaning of the question to answer it in 2 minutes. But no, that's the best I could do.
Can I ask something, Ajahn?
Yes, Bernie, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
on.
Is Nibbana the exception that proves the rule that you have been talking about today?
Indeed, that is an ending. But that's a very powerful thing to understand. How can that be an ending of all this energy called life? And one of the great answers which I give is something about the nature of the physical universe. There's many definitions about Nibbana, but because I've got into science at the beginning here, you know, this universe, the Big Bang, you know, what was before it? You know, can a universe emerge out of nothing? And we have something in science. You're an engineer. You remember this very well-known law of physics. The conservation of mass energy. You can't create mass energy, you can't destroy it. It's always constant. So where did all this mass energy, which you can see around us, come from? Could it come out of nothing? And the only way you can answer that, and I said this first to a talk I was doing with Professor David Blair at UWA. I said, what would happen? There is such a thing called negative energy. One example of negative energy, only one example amongst many, is potential energy. Now, to take this clock and take it out of the gravitational field of the Earth, basically put it into orbit, will take up a lot of energy. Any massive object in any force field has a negative energy component. So there is such a thing as negative energy. So what I asked Professor Blair, what would happen if the sum total of this negative energy in the universe, negative mass energy, totally balanced the positive side of mass energy? I remember that moment because he looked at me. He said, wow, you're so up to date. Omega equals one. He agreed with me. It was actually something I never knew because I never read the books, but it was actually true. So the sum total of energy in this universe is zero. That's why I can come from nothing and go back to nothing. The sum total of energy called you, Don, is zero. That's why it can go back to nothing. The ending, Nibbana. If there was something here, it couldn't stop. But see how it can be balanced and disappear. It can end. Nibbana. Okay. Getting mystical. Anyway, let's go down to Germany, Marcus. How can we remember past lives if there are only processes of the aggregates that are continued at the moment of the breakup of the body? What is it that remembers? Okay, now that's coming from what we call the Abhidharma perspective of just moments. There are no such things as moments. But what there is just what we call like resonances. And this is actually how memories can happen. For example, somebody called it something jogs your memory. You know, you see something, maybe it's just, you know, the sound of a fire engine, and straight away it jogs a memory of, you know, a fire you experienced, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago. you can see these little resonances there, and sometimes it happens that something jogs your memory of a previous life. This is one of the little stories. I'm going to go on a tangent here. There was, when I was young, living in England, there was a comedian on TV called Roy Hudd, H-U-D-D. He was quite famous, but only in UK in the 60s. And I remember reading an article about him. He wrote this in a magazine. He just finished in a theatre one evening, and he was driving home, and he got lost in a new one-way system in London. He didn't know where he was going, trying to find a way out. He turned down a road he'd never been to before in this life. And straight away, all these memories just flooded into him, one of the weirdest experiences, because that was the road in which he lived in a previous life. The great part of this story was, you know, if you've ever been to the City of London, they have a specific trait. I don't think it's only in London they do this. They have these blue circular plaques on the walls. If any famous person has stayed there, they mark that place. You know, Sir Alexander Fleming stayed here. Winston Churchill, you know, worked here. And you go around this historical city and you can see all these incredibly famous people and where they live. Mick Jagger wrote, you know, I can't get any satisfaction in this house or whatever. And it's fascinating to see that. There was a plaque on the wall of the house. He said, that was me in my previous life. And if any of you know your history of especially music hall in London, there was a very famous, perhaps one of the most famous music hall presenters. This was like the entertainment in the 20s and 30s, called Dan Leno, L-E-N-O. And this guy, Roy Hudd, said, that was me in my previous life. And he knocked on the door of this house. And, of course, they recognized him because he was a TV personality. He said, what are you doing here? He said, I used to live here. He couldn't have done in my previous life. And he took them all over the house and showed them things which even they didn't know about the place. What was fascinating was he was an entertainer in this life. And he wasn't that famous, but famous enough to be on TV. He was an entertainer in his previous life. And he wrote that article at great personal cost, I heard later on. Because what happened to him, his career stopped at that point. Because I think there was two TV channels over in UK at the time, and he was contracted to one TV channel, and the head of that TV channel was a Catholic. And he said, I'm not having this crazy guy who believes in reincarnation. And his career nosedived from that point on. That's the sacrifice he made for telling an important story. So, that's how we remember. Something jogs our memory, and we can remember these things. And there are too many people who have those memories. If you want to see the evidence, Professor Ian Stevenson has done the work. One of our members here went to see Professor Ian Stevenson before he died. And he gave us a collection of his works, signed, which we have in Bodhinyana Monastery Library. And it's incredible work which he did as a scientist, investigating people who had spontaneous memories of their past lives and making sure that the people which went into his books were real. All those arguments and questions people have about, yeah, they got it from somewhere else. He pushed all of those cases aside and got the ones which you could not explain from any other reason at all. Watertight research. And he published the books. Evidence is there. So you do remember past lives. It can be done. People do that. And it's real. It's not fantasies. It can be proved. There's many, many sort of evidence about that. And how it works is for the idea of this mind. It's not like in the body. The mind can resonate with experiences from the past. So anyway, that's that one. Question two. My girlfriend often talks of suicide as a way to escape her troubles of this life. Is suicide a good option for escape? What would the consequences be? Again, suicide is always looking for an ending of things. Suicide is not an end. This is one of the problems. When we believe that we've only got one life, you know, the Western idea, oh, you kill the body and that's it, you're finished. that would make suicide an attractive option for some people. But, you know, in Buddhist way of looking at things, and most other religions as well, death doesn't end the conscious experience. You carry on afterwards. So suicide is just a stupid option. You kill the body, but the problem comes afterwards. And people who do suicide, imagine just how disappointed they are afterwards. Even that didn't work. They still got the problems after they've killed themselves. Even worse. So that's why if you understand about rebirth, it's going to happen. You're not going to end things that easily. Yeah, you kill the body, but the mind, the stream of consciousness, as the Buddha kept on saying, continues on. And so there you are afterwards. The body's gone, but you're still conscious. You don't need a brain to be conscious. That's been proven so many times. There you are, aware, and you're really stuffed up. The consequences, you don't measure a life just by two bad bricks. What else have you done in your life? So again, a person commits suicide, sometimes they just blow it, they make a mistake. But what else did they do in their life? That counts too. And I don't know why people say, oh, suicide is bad, suicide is evil, they go to hell, rotten things would happen to them. No, please don't be that cruel and that stupid also. It's what else has a person done in their life? And you can't destroy a wall because of two bad bricks, the way they ended their life. So what else they've done is also important. And lastly, how does unwholesome acts like anger and hatred reflect on rebirth? Yeah, most people have got angry from time to time, but generally in your life, have you been kind? Have you been generous? Have you been a good person? You don't sort of define a life by one or two acts. It's a whole life. The problem is with human beings that they make mistakes, and those are the only things which they really remember. It's a stupid thing. Why don't we remember again the beautiful things, the good bricks in the wall? And then, yeah, you've been angry, but you've also loved a lot and you've forgiven a lot. You've been so kind to other people. You've gone out of your way to help others. You know, most human beings are like that. Most human beings are really kind, good people. And people even you think are bastards. They're only that every now and again. Sometimes they're very kind and beautiful and lovely. So if we remember that, the kindness and beauty in people, then we put things in perspective. And then, you know, yeah, you do an act of anger and hatred sometimes, but what about all the other things you do? And it balances. As the Buddha said, if you put a spoonful of salt in a cup of water, you can't drink the water, it's really salty. But if you put a spoonful of salt in a swimming pool, you can't even taste the salt. So most people have got big swimming pools. You know, you have been kind, you have been generous, you're good people. So just, you know, a few little acts of anger and hatred, they're just like a spoonful of salt in a swimming pool. Especially don't do any anger and hatred. But, you know, if you do a little bit, it's not going to really have too much of a problem for you. It's a spoon of salt in a big swimming pool. So be kind to yourself. And so, you know, people are so hard upon themselves. They should love themselves much more and give themselves a break. So I'm going to give myself a break and give you a break too, because that's enough for this evening. Thank you very much for listening. Very good. So let's now pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and then we can go. And I'm doing a midnight flight to Sydney tonight, to Singapore. So I'll see you in a couple of weeks' time.
Arahant Sammasambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.